All right, so get ready for this one, folks. We're going to be looking at a case today that'll really make you think about theft in the digital age.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Lund v. Commonwealth, a 1973 Virginia case.
Yes.
That asked a question that almost seemed like science fiction back then.
Right.
Can you really steal computer time?
Yeah, it really is a fascinating case, and I think it really highlights the challenges that the law, especially criminal law, has in adapting to new technologies. Mm. You know, back then, back in 1973, computer time was a very different thing.
Totally.
You know, we're talking about mainframes, punch cards. You know, it was a limited and very expensive resource.
Yeah, it's like a utility. Almost.
Yeah, exactly.
So in this case, we've got Charles Walter Lund.
Right.
He's a PhD student at Virginia Tech.
Uh-huh.
And he needed to use the university's computer for his dissertation. You know, as one does.
Yeah.
But it seems like maybe somebody forgot to read the fine print or check the terms and conditions box.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. His faculty advisor actually failed to get authorization for Lund to use the computer. And, you know, this wasn't just some kind of minor administrative oversight.
Right.
This computer was actually leased from IBM, and the costs were allocated to different departments.
Wow.
So any unauthorized use was a pretty big deal financially.
Yeah, like accidentally putting your personal vacation on the company card.
Exactly.
Yikes. So what happened? What happened next?
Well, things escalated pretty quickly. Lund was accused of stealing not just physical items like keys and computer cards, but also unauthorized use of computer time and services with intent to defraud.
Wow.
And get this, the alleged value of that unauthorized time was over $5,000.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, back in 1973, that was a significant chunk of change.
That's a lot of dough.
Yeah.
So that's where things get really interesting to me, at least.
Yeah.
How do you even define stealing computer time?
Right.
I mean, he didn't walk off with a server under his arm.
Yeah, that's the really interesting legal question at the heart of the case. The prosecution argued that computer time and services, you know, even though they're intangible,
right,
should be considered property under Virginia law.
Okay.
And therefore subject to theft. Just like any physical object.
So they were really trying to put a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
They're trying to apply like old laws to this
yeah,
new technology.
Exactly. They were relying on Virginia Code sections 18.1100 and 18.1118,
right,
which define larceny in pretty broad terms.
Mm.
But Lund's defense had a pretty strong counterargument.
Okay.
They said that, look, the essential element of what's called asportation.
Asportation.
Which means physically taking and carrying away.
Okay.
Just doesn't apply to something intangible like computer services.
Right. So for our listeners who maybe aren't steeped in the law.
Yeah.
Can you maybe break down what asportation is and why it's such a big deal here?
Sure. So, you know, the traditional understanding of larceny going back, you know, centuries, required that somebody physically take and carry away another person's property. And it's easy to understand this with like tangible goods. You steal a car, you physically moved it from the owner's possession to your possession. But how do you apply that to something like computer time, which really only exists as a function of the machine?
Right. It's like trying to steal like a radio wave.
Right.
You can't really like take it in the traditional sense.
Exactly.
So how did the Virginia Supreme Court actually rule on this?
Well, in a pretty surprising move, the court actually sided with Lund.
Wow.
They overturned his conviction.
Really?
Yeah. And they emphasized this key legal principle that criminal statutes should be interpreted very strictly. So basically what they're saying is if a law doesn't specifically say that an act is a crime, then it's not a crime, no matter how much it might seem like one.
So basically, the Virginia law at the time was written, you know, way before anybody was even thinking about hacking or cybercrime.
Right.
They just didn't envision this.
Yeah, they didn't contemplate this kind of theft of computer time.
So the court was basically saying, look, this is all new territory.
Yeah.
We need the lawmakers to kind of catch up and give us some clearer rules.
Exactly. And you know, because the law didn't specifically mention this, the court said, well, you know, using computer time without authorization might be unethical.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually meet the legal definition of larceny.
Hmm. That's so interesting how this case really forced the courts to confront the limits of the law. in this brand new technological world.
Yeah, it's a great example of how the law has to adapt to keep up with technology.
Absolutely. It's like they were saying, we need new laws to deal with this.
Yeah.
It's incredible to think that this case from 1973, dealing with what seems like ancient technology now, could have such a lasting impact on the legal world. But I think there's another really interesting aspect of this case too, right? It wasn't just about this abstract idea of stealing computer time. It also involved these physical items too, didn't it?
You're absolutely right.
Okay, so let's dig into this.
Yeah, let's dig into that. Yeah, those physical items actually bring up a really interesting point. Even though the court ultimately said that stealing computer time didn't fit the definition of larceny.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that Lund had those keys, those computer cards, you know, that gave him that physical access to the system, that probably played a role in the initial charges against him.
Yeah, it's almost like those physical objects were like a bridge between the familiar world of tangible theft and this new world of digital access.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. It, you know, it was just easier for people to grasp the idea of stealing something that you could hold in your hand.
Hmm.
But the court ultimately recognized that the real issue was the intangible nature of computer time and services.
Hmm. And I think that's a really crucial distinction because it really sets the stage for how we think about digital theft today. Right. Back then, the idea of stealing something that existed only in the digital world was like mind blowing.
Yeah.
But now we're dealing with data breaches, intellectual property theft, even the theft of cryptocurrencies, which, you know, have no physical form whatsoever.
Right. And it's amazing to think how much has changed in just a few decades. And Lund v. Commonwealth was really an important step in that evolution. It forced the legal system to start grappling with these unique challenges of defining and protecting property in the digital age.
Yeah, it's like the court was throwing down a gauntlet, you know, challenging lawmakers to come up with these new legal frameworks that could keep up with technology.
Exactly. And it's a challenge that's still with us today. I mean, think about the debates that we're having around data privacy and cloud computing and the ownership of digital assets. These are all really thorny issues that require us to rethink these traditional notions of property and ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of thorny issues, let's get back to those physical objects in Lund's case, the keys, the cards, and especially those printouts. The court had some problems with how the prosecution valued those items, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So, you know, the prosecution tried to link the value of the printouts to the cost of the computer time used to create them.
Mm.
But the court said, no, those printouts by themselves, they have very little market value. They're essentially like scrap paper.
That's a really important distinction because, you know, just because something costs a certain amount to produce, that doesn't mean that it automatically has that same value in the marketplace.
Mm, precisely. And this really gets to the heart of the difficulty in valuing digital assets. How do you put a price tag on something that exists only in the digital realm, especially when its value might be, you know, entirely subjective or dependent on context?
Yeah. It's a question that's still relevant today. You know, think about digital art, for example. A single JPEG can sell for millions of dollars.
Right.
While others are basically worthless. It really all comes down to perception and scarcity and you know, how the market values things.
It's really fascinating, isn't it? I mean, this world of digital assets has created a whole new economy with its own unique rules and challenges. And Lund v. Commonwealth was a really interesting early glimpse into that world. It forced the courts to grapple with these questions of value and ownership that are still relevant today.
Yeah, I think it's clear that this case was about so much more than just one student's, you know, unauthorized use of a university computer. I mean, it really exposed these fundamental gaps in the law, and it's sparked a conversation about the legal implications of technology that's still going on today. But beyond the legal stuff, I wonder about the broader impact of this case on society, you know?
Yeah, I bet it caused a lot of head scratching back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, can you imagine trying to explain to somebody in 1973 that you could steal something that has no physical form?
it probably sounded like science fiction.
Exactly.
And I bet the media had a field day with this story.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I mean, it had all the elements of a great news story. You know, you've got this relatable protagonist, you've got this novel legal dilemma, and then you've got this touch of technological mystery. It probably really fueled a lot of anxieties about the potential for this new technology to be misused.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to think how a legal case like this could capture the public's imagination and really spark a wider conversation about the role of technology in our lives.
Yeah, and that's the power of a really groundbreaking case like Lund v. Commonwealth. I mean, it didn't just reshape the legal landscape, it also brought up these really important societal questions about how we understand and interact with technology.
Speaking of understanding and interacting with technology, I think there's another really important lesson here, too. Mm-hmm. It's about the limits of foresight, especially when it comes to lawmakers trying to predict the future of technology.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's almost impossible to envision all the different ways that a new technology could be used.
Right.
Or misused.
Let alone abused, yeah.
And you know, trying to draft laws that cover every possible scenario can sometimes lead to really broad or vague language that can create more problems than it solves.
Right. So how do we strike that balance? I mean, how do we create laws that are flexible enough to adapt to all these rapid changes in technology, but also precise enough to give us clear guidance and to protect people's rights?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And it's one that legal scholars and policymakers are still wrestling with. But I think Lund v. Commonwealth offers a really valuable lesson, which is that sometimes the best approach is to focus on core principles.
Okay.
And allow the legal system to kind of adapt and interpret those principles as new challenges come up.
It's like instead of having this rigid set of rules, we have this set of like guardrails that can guide technological development.
Yeah.
You know, without stifling innovation or becoming obsolete the minute a new gadget comes out.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that the law is not static. It's this dynamic system that has to evolve alongside technology. And Lund v. Commonwealth is a really great reminder of that. It shows that even when we're faced with something completely new, the legal system can still find a way to adapt and provide fair rulings.
And it all started with a PhD student who just wanted to finish his dissertation.
Yeah, it's amazing how these seemingly ordinary cases can have such a profound impact.
Absolutely. So for our listeners out there, especially the lawyers and the law students who are, you know, trying to make sense of this ever-changing world of technology law, what are some of the key takeaways from all of this?
Well, I think there are a couple of really important ones. First, Lund v. Commonwealth shows just how important it is to stay up to date on new technologies and think about their potential legal implications. Lawyers have to be proactive, you know, really understand these new landscapes and try to anticipate the legal challenges that they might bring.
It's almost like being a legal futurist, you know, constantly mm-hmm. looking ahead to see what's coming next.
Exactly. Exactly. And second, the case shows how important it is to have clear and precise language in the law, especially when it comes to technology. You know, vague or ambiguous laws can lead to a lot of confusion and uncertainty.
Right.
And it can be really hard to apply those laws to situations that are constantly changing.
Hmm. And lastly, I think Lund v. Commonwealth is a really good reminder that the law isn't just this set of fixed rules. It's a living, breathing system.
Right.
That has to adapt to a changing world.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well said. Well, I think we've really explored this landmark case in depth.
We have.
And its impact on the world of technology law. Is there anything else you think our listeners should keep in mind as they navigate this increasingly complex intersection of law and technology?
You know, I think the really important thing to remember here is that Lund v. Commonwealth isn't just some dusty old case that's irrelevant today. It has a lot to say to anybody who's working at the intersection of law and technology.
So what's the big takeaway here for our listeners? What makes this case so important, you know, all these years later?
Well, I think it's a really good reminder that we can't always predict the future, especially when it comes to technology. I mean, the lawmakers back in 1973, they had no idea about cloud computing or cryptocurrency or the Internet of Things, and they definitely didn't anticipate the kinds of cybercrime that we see today.
You know, trying to write laws that cover every future possibility is like trying to hit a moving target in the dark.
Exactly.
But we still need some kind of legal framework to deal with these new technologies and all the disruptions they bring.
Right. And that's why Lund v. Commonwealth is so instructive. It highlights the importance of having a legal system that's flexible, that's adaptable, you know, one that can take existing laws and interpret them in light of new circumstances and new technologies, even if those technologies weren't specifically mentioned when the laws were written.
Yeah, it's like the difference between having a really strict set of rules and having a set of guiding principles.
Uh-huh.
You know, principles can be applied to new situations in a way that rules just can't. Rules can become outdated really quickly.
Right. That's a great analogy. And it's why judicial interpretation is so important in this area of law. You know, judges have the power to take these statutes and interpret them and apply them to new situations that the lawmakers might never have even imagined.
So in a sense, Lund v. Commonwealth is really a case about the resilience of the legal system.
Yeah.
You know, its ability to adapt to new challenges and still come up with fair rulings, even when it's dealing with something completely new.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really encouraging thought in a world where technology is changing so fast, it sometimes feels like it's outpacing our ability to understand it or regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
But the principles of due process and fair notice and proportionality, these are timeless concepts that can guide us as we try to navigate this ever-changing world of digital law.
It really underscores the importance of legal professionals, you know, really thinking critically and creatively about how existing laws can be applied to these new developments in technology. It's about finding those connections, those threads that link the past to the present and can help us anticipate the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Lund v. Commonwealth is a reminder that the law is dynamic, it's constantly changing to meet the challenges of a changing world. And for those of us who work in the legal profession, it's an invitation to be a part of that change, to be the ones who help shape the future of law in this digital age.
Well, I think we've really explored the depths of Lund v. Commonwealth, and we've seen its lasting impact on the world of technology law. What final thoughts would you leave our listeners with as they, you know, continue to grapple with this intersection of law and technology?
I would just say stay curious, stay engaged and stay informed. You know, the world of technology law is constantly evolving, and it's up to us to keep up with those changes and make sure that the law remains a relevant and effective tool for navigating the digital age.
Wise words. And on that note, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Lund v. Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep pushing the boundaries of legal thought.